Excuse me, my lord.
Denby, who was cleaning his dueling pistol, looked up when Tolliver came in.
Yes, Mr. Tolliver, what is it?
There is a gentleman by the name of Lucas Meacham who wishes to have an audience with you.
Meacham is here? What is Meacham doing here? I thought he was... Oh, never mind, show him in.
Yes, sir.
Denby didn't put the pistol away, but was instead aiming it at an imaginary target when Tolliver showed Meacham into the study.
What the hell is that?
This is a single-shot percussion dueling pistol made by A. Kellner of Prague. It is a 58 caliber, 8 7/8 inch ribbed round barrel, exquisitely made and perfectly balanced.
What do you think something like that can do? Especially since it only has one shot.
Denby aimed the pistol at Meacham and pulled the hammer back.
One shot is enough.
What? What are you doing? Point that thing somewhere else.
Denby held the pistol steady for a moment as Meacham squirmed. Then, with a smile, he lowered it and eased the hammer back down.
Evidently, you'd think it quite capable of killing someone.
Did you say that it was a 50 caliber?
It is a 58 caliber.
That's the size of a small cannonball. Hell yes, it can kill someone.
Why are you here, Mr. Meacham? Am I to gather by your presence that you have dealt with Matt Jensen?
No. Not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly? You have either taken care of the matter or you have not. Which is it?
I have not.
Then I will ask you again, why are you here?
Mr. Denby, do you know this man Jensen?
You will address me as Lord Denby.
What? Oh, yeah, Lord Denby. I'm sorry, I forgot.
To answer your question, no. I do not know anything about him.
Yes, sir. Well, you said you never heard of him, so I guess you don't know, but he's one of the best-known pistoliers in the West. His name is practically legend. And he's one hard son of a bitch to kill.
Why? Won't a bullet kill him, just as it would any other human being?
Yes, sir, that's not what I meant. What I meant was getting that bullet into him. It's like he has 9 lives or something. And like I said, he's damn good with a gun.
I thought you were good with a gun. Isn't that why I hired you?
Yes, sir, I am good with a gun. But this man Jensen... Well, sir, he's about as good as they come. I don't reckon there's more than 2 or 3 people in the country who are as good as he is.
Would you be one of those 2 or 3?
As a matter of fact, I am.
Then what is the problem?
The problem is, we ain't talked about money.
Of course we have. In the telegram I sent you, I clearly said that you would be compensated as before.
Yes, sir. But what I want to know is, how much money are we talking about? Because the compensation you gave me last time, well, that was for someone who barely knew which end of a gun the bullet came out of. It's different with Jensen. And what you paid last time ain't enough for this job.
How much do you think this job is worth?
$3,000.
$3,000?
Yes, sir.
That's twice as much as I gave you for your last job.
Yes, sir. But like I said, Jensen is twice as hard to kill.
All right. If you get the job done, I will pay your price.
Good.
Unless Mr. Buttram kills him first.
Wait a minute. You've hired someone else to kill Matt Jensen?
Not specifically. But I have hired someone who is quite skilled in the use of firearms and has demonstrated to me a willingness... No, I dare say an eagerness to ply his trade. If he encounters Matt Jensen before you do, then he may kill him. That would save me the $3,000 I just promised you.
Who is this butler person, anyway?
Oliver Buttram. You have a comment?
Yeah. I ain't worried. Because he ain't gonna kill Matt Jensen.
How do you know he won't?
Because I've never heard of him. And if I've never heard of him, he damn sure ain't gonna be good enough to kill Matt Jensen.
Well, we will just have to see, won't we?
By way of dismissal, Denby picked up an oiled cloth and began cleaning his pistol again. When he saw that Meacham had not yet left, he looked up.
You have something else?
Yes, sir.
Yes?
I don't know where Matt Jensen is. I mean, I found him, but before I could do anything, I sort of lost track of him.
Well, Mr. Meacham, you can't very well kill him if you don't know where he is, can you?
No, sir.
Hadn't you better be looking for him?
Yes, sir, but the thing is, seeing as you're the one who wants him dead, well, I was thinking maybe you might know where he is.
Most astute of you, Mr. Meacham.
Denby lifted his pistol and Meacham grew tense, but he relaxed when he saw Denby aim the gun at something outside the window.
The truth is, I do not know where he is at this exact moment, but I have a pretty good idea of where he will be soon.
Where?
Here, Mr. Meacham. Or at least in Fullerton. It would seem that Fullerton is a crusading journalist, and that journalist has written a letter to Matt Jensen inviting him to come to town. I don't think it will be for a social visit.
Do you know when he's coming to Fullerton?
No. I'm afraid he did not clear his itinerary with me.
Well, then, I'll just go into town and wait on him.
Yes, you do that.
Denby loaded his pistol, then fitted with a percussion cap.
I'll walk you outside.
Meacham was visibly nervous at seeing Denby with a loaded pistol, but he didn't protest. Once outside, Denby pointed to a prairie rose. The small pink wildflower was some 30 yards distant.
Would you like to see a demonstration of the Kellner dueling pistol?
You ain't gonna tell me you could hit that flower from here with that thing, are you?
Denby didn't answer. Instead, he aimed and pulled the trigger. There was a flash of smoke and light. The heavy caliber bullet destroyed the prairie rose.
As I said, Mr. Meacham, one shot is enough.
Yes, sir. I reckon it could be.
The groomsman who had taken Meacham's horse from him earlier now came toward him, leading the animal.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, sir.
Denby gave Meacham a dollar.
You will come to a toll gate on the road between here and town. Give the men who are manning the gate this dollar, and they will give you a coupon. When you get into town, you will encounter Buttram. Buttram will ask you to show him a coupon proving that you paid the toll. Show him that coupon.
Since I'm working for you, won't they just let me through? Especially if you give me a letter or something?
Yes, I'm sure they would. But I don't want anyone to know you are working for me. Not the men at the gate, and not Mr. Buttram. When you get to town, try and remain as inconspicuous as you can until you get the opportunity to attend to your task.
All right. Whatever you say, Mr. Denby.
Lord Denby.
Meacham had been on the road for about half an hour when he saw the toll gate. Someone stepped out into the road in front of him. For a moment, he contemplated telling them that he worked for Denby and keeping the dollar. After all, a dollar was a dollar. But for some reason, Denby didn't want anyone to know that Meacham was working for him, and he didn't want to anger Denby because he didn't want to take a chance on losing the $3,000 he was going to get for killing Jensen.
Where are you headed?
What difference does it make to you as long as I pay the toll?
No difference at all, I reckon. That'll be,
Here, damn it.
Bleeker saw Meacham extending a dollar to him.
A dollar? Yeah. Well, good for you. You had the money already. How'd you know how much the toll was?
I'm not here to palaver with you. Just open the damn gate and let me through.
Bleeker took the dollar.
Well, it's good to see that you're a good citizen. Oh, and if you're going into town, more than likely you're going to run into a sawed-off run of a fella. A real little man by the name of Buttram. Well, he's going to want to see this coupon, so it's best you don't lose it. Oh, and when he asks to see it, you better show it to him, you hear? Buttram might be a little fella, but he ain't the kind of man you want to piss off.
Uh-huh. I'll keep that in mind.
Matt had a 6-hour layover in Denver, which was plenty of time for him to take care of something he needed to do. After making certain that Spirit was taken off the train and secured in the depot stable, Matt went out front of the depot and caught a ride on one of the horse-drawn trolleys. He stepped off the trolley 10 minutes later in front of the federal building. The office of the old friend he was looking for, Marshal Charlie Connors, was on the second floor. He had a favor to ask of Charlie. Finally, after 3 days of travel and having changed trains 3 times, Matt debarked the train in Ellendale. A quick perusal of the county map inside the depot showed him that Fullerton was about 20 miles northeast. Once his horse was offloaded, he began the last leg of his journey. It was nearly noon when Matt saw a boy standing out behind a house drawing water from a well. Matt's canteen was low and Spirit was thirsty, so he sloped down the hill and headed toward the compound, which consisted of a house, barn, what appeared to be a granary, and an outhouse.
Pa! 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 A stranger's coming!
So as not to appear hostile, Matt swung out of the saddle about 30 yards before approaching the house. Then he led Spirit and walked the rest of the way, reaching the yard at about the same time a man came out onto the porch. The man had a rifle in his right hand, though at the moment he was holding it low by his knees.
Good afternoon.
Can I do something for you, mister?
Name's Jensen, Matt Jensen. I'm on the way to Fullerton and I saw the boy at the well. Truth is, my canteen's empty and my horse is thirsty. Wondering if I could trouble you for some water. Be glad to pay you for it.
Pay for it, you say?
Yes, sir.
You don't ride for Denby, do you? He owns just about everything you can see around here except for the hills. And if he had his way, he would own them too.
No, I don't ride for Denby.
I didn't think so. Not if you offered to pay for the water. Neither Denby nor anybody who works for him would pay for anything if they could get away with it. Help yourself to the water.
Thanks. And I'm serious about paying for it.
No need for that. Nope. The Lord put the water in the ground. Doesn't cost me anything to take it out. And doesn't seem to me that it would be Christian for me to charge for it. What did you say your name was again?
Jensen. Matt Jensen.
My name is Fowler. Edward B. Fowler. Most folks just call me E.B. That's my boy, Green.
Green?
Back in Texas, we had us a 2-year drought before he was born. My wife took it real hard. Thought maybe she wasn't ever going to see anything green again. When the boy was born, we named him Green just so she could see green anytime she wanted.
Matt dipped the dipper into the bucket, then glanced up at E.B.
Sure, go ahead, take a drink. I'll wager it'll be about the best tasting water you ever put in your mouth.
Matt drank deeply, and the water was cool and sweet. E.B. was right about the water. If it wasn't the best water he had ever tasted, it was certainly equal to it. He began pouring it into his canteen. As he did so, Spirit started pawing at the ground.
You have a watering trough somewhere?
Just inside the corral fence. Your horse can drink all he wants.
Thanks. And you were right about the water. It is very good.
Would you like me to lead your horse to the water, Mr. Jensen?
Well, thank you, Green. I'm sure Spirit would appreciate that.
Spirit?
That's my horse's name.
Oh, come on, Spirit.
Spirit looked at Matt.
It's all right. You can go with him.
That's a good-looking horse. Well-trained, too.
He's not trained. He's just smart.
I hear you.
Sue Fowler came out onto the porch.
A.B., who are you talking to?
Sue, this gentleman's Matt Jensen. He stopped by for water.
Matt touched the brim of his hat in a salute.
Miss Fowler?
Why don't you invite him for dinner, E.B.? It's about ready.
Of course. Won't you stay for dinner, Mr. Jensen?
Oh, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't want to intrude on your family.
It's not an intrusion. We get company so rarely here that your presence would be most welcome.
The thought of a home-cooked meal does beat eating jerky.
If you want, I'll have Green take the saddle off your horse and let him loose in the corral. No doubt he needs a break, too.
Thanks.
Green, unsaddle Mr. Jensen's horse and put some fresh hay out. We're going to feed Mr. Jensen. He may as well feed his horse as well.
All right, Pa.
Better let me unsaddle him. Spirit is still new, and I don't know but what he might get spooked if someone else took the saddle off.
A few minutes later, Matt was sitting at a table that featured fried chicken, canned string beans, mashed potatoes, gravy, and biscuits.
Oh, my. And to think I almost turned this down.
Green reached for a drumstick, but Sue glared at him, and he pulled his hand back.
Not before your father says grace.
Green bowed his head, as did Matt.
Bless this food to our use, and ourselves to your service. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
They talked during the meal.
We're originally from Texas. After I come back from the war, well, Yankees was coming down with a pretty heavy hand and even heavier taxes. Finally got to where I couldn't take it anymore. Then I read that there was good land for homesteading if you was willing to come up here to the Dakota Territory. So we decided to sell everything we had and come up here.
We decided?
Now, Sue, you know very well if you had said you didn't want to come that we would have never left Texas.
Sue reached across the table to lay her hand on E.B.'s hand.
Honey, I knew that you wanted to come, and wherever you go, that's where I'll be.
When Matt finished eating, he pushed back from the table and rubbed his stomach appreciatively.
Miss Fowler, I cannot remember when I had a better meal. You are a wonderful cook.
Why, thank you, Mr. Jensen. Thank you very much.
I need to be going on, but I do wish you would let me pay you for this wonderful meal.
Nonsense. What sort of hostess would I be if I charged my guests?
Then I will sing your praises not only as a gracious hostess, but a wonderful cook. Mr. Fowler?
E.B., please.
E.B., it's been a pleasure, and I hope to meet you again sometime soon.
Well, if you stay in these parts for a while, I'm sure we'll meet again. Will you be staying here for a while? Not that it's any of my business.
I'm not sure how long I'll be here, but I would like to ask you something. You mentioned a man by the name of Denby. Who's he?
He's an Englishman. Lord Nigel Cordell Denby.
Lord Denby? I thought there were no titles in America.
There aren't, but he makes anyone who works for him call him Lord. And if you want to do business with him, you also call him Lord.
When I first rode up, you asked if I rode for Denby. What made you think that?
Oh, I'm sorry I accused you. Just a little spooked, I guess.
Have you had any run-ins with him?
Not directly.
Except for what happened when you joined Mr. McCann and the others to try and force your way through the toll gate. Frank Tanner was killed.
Like I said, that wasn't a direct run-in with Denby. That was a run-in with some of his men.
It's the same thing. And after all, his collecting a toll is why we don't go to church anymore.
You said something a moment ago about it costing you $2 to go to town and another $2 to come back. Is that what you're talking about, a toll?
In order to go into town, you have to take the Ellendale Road, and it goes right through the middle of Denby's property. He has men positioned there to charge you a toll.
It isn't his road. Ellendale Highway is a public road laid out by the Territory of Dakota. Mr. Bryce wrote about it in his paper. He said the road was constructed by the Territory of Dakota as a public thoroughfare to which people should have clear and unfettered access. I guess we should be thankful to him that he doesn't charge a toll for the young people who have to go into town to go to school. If he did, that would be $2 per day, and we couldn't afford it.
Oh, yes. Denby is a very compassionate man.
I'm not taking up for him, Sue. I'm just saying we should be thankful he doesn't charge kids who are going to school.
We don't need to be thankful to him for anything.
If the road is public, Denby has no right to charge anyone a toll. Even if the road does run through his property, why didn't the sheriff do something about it?
The sheriff is down in Ellendale. He doesn't pay that much attention to what goes on in Fullerton. Fact is, he doesn't pay that much attention to anything that goes on in the whole valley. Denby pretty much has Elm Valley all staked out for his own self. In fact, he not only controls the valley, just about controls the whole county.
How can he do that? Doesn't Fullerton have a mayor, city council, or marshal?
Mayor Felker is a businessman, and so are all the people who are on the city council. And Denby, being their biggest customer, they don't want to do anything that would piss him off.
E.B., mind your language.
Sorry, Sue, but that's the way it is, and you know it. Like I said, the sheriff don't pay no attention to what goes on up here, and Marshal Tipton isn't going to do anything unless he has the backing of the mayor and the city council. What we need is someone with a little gumption.
Like the newspaper man.
Yeah, but all he's done is write articles about it. We need more than words. Words don't mean anything to someone like Buttram.
Buttram? Who's Buttram?
Ollie Buttram is the one who killed Frank Tanner and the two cowboys that Green was talking about a moment ago. He's a paid killer for Denby. He's the ugliest, most dried-up little runt you ever saw in your life. In the real world, he'd be someone you wouldn't give a second look to. But this isn't the real world, and Buttram has everyone terrified.
We seen him kill the two cowboys.
We went into town for supplies and were unwilling witnesses to it. Two men challenged Buttram and killed them both.
He's real fast. He's the fastest I ever seen.
And you've seen so many.
He must be pretty good if he took on two at the same time.
There's nothing good about that evil little man.
Have you ever shot anybody with your gun?
Green!
Hey, it's all right, Miss Fowler. Young boys are curious about such things, I know that.
So, have you?
It's not something you ever want to do.
But you have shot somebody, I bet.
That's enough, Green. We'll have no more talk about shooting people.
I bet you could beat Buttram. I bet you could kill him.
Green, I said stop it now, and I mean it. I'm sorry, Mr. Jensen. I don't know what's gotten into him.
It's all right. As I said, boys are curious about such things. But I really must be going now. And I want to thank you again for a wonderful meal.
Matt pulled a coin from his pocket.
Green, your Ma and Pa won't take any money for that wonderful meal, but that doesn't mean you can't take a little money for your excellent handling of my horse.
Oh, gee, thanks!
E.B., Mrs. Fowler, I thank you again for your hospitality. I hope someday that I can repay you in some way.
Well, one never knows.
Not long after Matt left the Fowler place, he saw a gate stretched across the road in front of him. There were two men watching the gate, which was mounted on a pivot so it could be swung open. One of the men stepped out into the road and held out his hand.
Where are you headed?
Nowhere. Anywhere. Wherever this road leads.
For you, this road don't lead nowhere beyond this here gate without you paying a toll.
How much is the toll?
$1.
Who's collecting the money?
That's a dumb question, mister. What's it look like, who's collecting the money? Me and Carver here.
If you're collecting for the Dakota Territory, I'm afraid I'm going to have to see some authority.
We ain't collecting for Dakota. We're collecting for Lord Denby, and that's all the authority you need.
This is a public road.
Not no more it ain't. It comes right through the middle of Prestonshire on Elm. That's Lord Denby's property, and that makes it his road. If you want to pass through it, you're going to have to pay the toll.
I have no intention of paying a toll to pass on a public road. Open the gate.
You know what, Bleaker? I think maybe he don't hear so good.
Carver reached for his pistol, but when he saw a gun suddenly appear in Matt's hand, he let his own pistol drop back down into its holster.
Take off your pistol belts and hand them to me, both of you.
Mister, have you gone loco? Do you have any idea who you're up against?
I believe this man called you Bleaker, and you said his name was Carver, so yeah, I know who I'm up against. Now, Mr. Bleaker and Mr. Carver, this is the last time I'm going to ask you. Take off your belts and hand them up to me.
Lord Denby ain't going to like this. He ain't going to like it none at all.
Who are you, mister?
The name is Jensen. Matt Jensen.
We'll be running into each other again, Jensen.
Now take off those gun belts, like I said.
Bleaker and Carver removed their gun belts and passed them up to Matt. He looped both of them around the saddle pommel.
Open the gate.
With a scowl on his face, Bleaker complied.
Mister, them guns cost money.
Really? Take the money out of the toll you've collected so far.
Help! Spirit burst forth as if being shot from a cannon. Within less than a minute, he was half a mile down the road.
Well, are we going after him?
And do what? We ain't got no guns. He took them, remember? And even if we did, do you see how fast he drew his pistol? I mean, he was sitting on a horse, but still drawing that gun faster than anyone I ever seen. I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't faster than Buttram.
I doubt that. I don't think there's anyone faster than Buttram.
Yeah? Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's a question better left decided between Buttram and this feller. I can tell you true, I ain't about to go up against him for no dollar. Especially seeing as it ain't even my dollar we'd be fighting over.
Yeah, I guess you're right. What'd he say his name was?
He said his name was Matt Jensen.
You ever hear of him before?
No.
Me neither. I think we should tell Lord Denby about it?
Hell no! You know how he is. If we tell him, he'd more than likely make us pay the dollar.
About 1 mile beyond where he had been stopped, Matt dropped the pistol belts and guns on the side of the road. Half an hour later, he saw something that from this distance seemed little more than a series of low-rising lumps of clay and rock. As he drew closer, however, the lumps began to take on the shape of houses and buildings until they finally materialized into a recognizable town. Just on the outside of the town was a sign that read Fullerton. It gave both the elevation, 1,442 feet, and the population, 312. In his wanderings through the West, Matt Jensen had encountered scores, maybe hundreds, of towns like this, so that after a while there was a sameness to all of them. He had never been to Fullerton, but the houses of ripsawed lumber and false-fronted businesses were all familiar to him.
Let's go, Spirit.
I know I had more capital F's than this. Can't very well set an ad that says window and door frames without the letter F now, can I?
You could spell frames with a PH.
Mr. Johnson would love that now, wouldn't he?
Here you are, John. Maybe this will help.
F's. Yes, Millie, I love you. I would even marry you if I wasn't already married.
What would your wife say about that?
Oh, I think she would approve. Can I help you, Mr.? Say, I remember you. You're Matt Jensen.
It's good to see you again, Mr. Bryce.
Oh, please. It's John, not Mr. Bryce. I wasn't sure you would come.
The two men shook hands.
Why not? You asked me to, didn't you?
Oh, yes. It was shameless of me to hold you to a passing remark you made back in Swan, Wyoming, so long ago, but I was desperate enough to eschew all honor.
Not shameless at all. And it wasn't just a passing remark. I meant it. I'm well aware, John, that if it hadn't been for you, I might not even be alive today. So whatever I can do for you, I'm more than glad to do it.
Oh, since the last time you saw me, there has been an addition.
He held out his hand toward his Millie, who smiled shyly.
This is my wife, Millie.
Mrs. Bryce, it's very nice to meet you.
And I am especially pleased to meet you. John has talked about you. You made quite an impression on him.
Believe me, he made an even larger impression upon me. If he hadn't written that story when he did, I might be dead.
I'm glad he was able to help you when he did. But I think he was wrong in getting you involved with this.
Not at all. Not at all. I meant it when I said if there was ever anything I could do for him, I'd do it.
Yes, well, the truth is, I really don't know what you can do. I mean, being just one man against a veritable army.
Denby has an army, does he?
For all intents and purposes, he does.
I did run into a couple of his men, Bleeker and Carver, I think they said their names were, on the road coming into town.
Bleeker and Carver, yes. A couple of his worst, though not the worst. I'm sorry about the toll. I'll be glad to pay the dollar back it cost you.
Didn't cost me a dollar.
What? You mean they didn't charge you a toll?
Now that you mention it, I believe they did say something about a toll, but I convinced them to let me go through anyway.
You convinced them?
John looked confused for a moment. Then he understood what Matt was saying.
See there, Millie. This is exactly the kind of person we need around here.
John, don't forget, you just said yourself that Mr. Jensen is just one man up against an army.
Yes, but from what I know of Matt Jensen, he's not your ordinary one man. Yes, sir. I feel a lot better about the situation now.
From what you know of him, I thought you only met him that one time.
True, but I've read a great deal about him since then. His name is often in the newspapers.
I am glad you've come to help us, Mr. Jensen. I just hope we haven't gotten you involved in something that's going to be more than you bargained for in answering John's letter.
If you encountered Bleeker and Carver, you already have an idea of what we're up against.
I also had lunch with a family not too far from here, the Fowlers. You know them?
E.B. and Millie Fowler. Indeed, I do know them. And their son, Green. They're as nice a family as you would ever want to meet.
They told me a little about Denby. I expect you'll tell me more.
What do you want to know?
You said he has a veritable army working for him. How many men does he have, do you know?
Well, I can't quote an exact number for you, but when I said he had an army, I wasn't just talking about the number of men. I mean, it's literally an army. He has a lot of rough men, well-armed, who don't actually do ranch work. As far as I can determine, their only purpose is just to intimidate the folks in Fullerton, in the valley, and in the whole county. That's why neither the sheriff nor Marshal Tipton will have anything to do with him.
Does Denby do much business with the town?
Oh my, yes. In fact, most of the business the town does is with Denby. And because of that, many of the citizens of the town have been perfectly willing to overlook the thing about the toll, afraid they'll lose his business. What they don't realize is that because of the toll, he squeezed out all the other customers, and he can dictate what he'll pay for goods and services, which means he can conduct business on his own terms. I've talked to the people about that, but they're too frightened to do anything about it. So I took it upon myself.
That's why you wrote the letter to me? You're smart to send it to Smoke, by the way. If I hadn't just happened to drop by Sugarloaf when I did, there's no telling when, if ever, that letter would have reached me.
Yes, but I'm not just talking about the letter. I also put out an extra.
An extra?
Yes. My paper only comes out once a week, but I published a special edition last week so that the paper came out twice. The regular edition and an extra edition.
I told him not to do that. I was afraid for him.
Millie, you knew when you married me that I was a journalist.
Yes, but I thought you would be writing about church socials, weddings, new businesses, that sort of thing. I didn't think you would be declaring war on someone like Nigel Denby.
Be honest, Millie. Did you really think I would just turn my back on it?
No. I knew that eventually you were going to take him up on it. I guess that courage is one of the things that attracted me to you.
Damn, really? And I thought it was my striking good looks. I'll show you that extra.
John walked over to a cabinet and pulled out a copy of the newspaper, then brought it back to show to Matt.
Extra. Denby hurting business. Charging tolls on public roads. Stage service suffers. These are the times that try men's souls. So wrote Thomas Paine at the founding of our country in his broadside, The Crisis. We, the citizens of Dickey County, are facing our own crisis now. having found our once idyllic life threatened by the draconian policies of one who calls himself Lord Denby. By taking possession of land in such a way as to totally isolate Fullerton, the despot Denby is squeezing the life from our community, as surely as does a boa constrictor who enwraps its hapless victims within its powerful coils. Denby has seized control of a road that was constructed by the Territory of Dakota as a public thoroughfare, along which people should have clear and unfettered access. Now, by means of armed thugs, he demands a toll from honest citizens who seek only to traverse this throughway. This inhibits not only personal travel, but business travel as well. As a result, fewer and fewer businessmen are willing to engage in commerce with our town, creating higher costs for the most basic items. After making a careful study of the law, this newspaper editor has determined that charging a toll for passage on a public road, even though that road might pass through private land, is illegal, and to do so is little more than highway robbery. Were a masked bandit to stop the stagecoach and demand money from the driver and passengers therein, he would be no more a thief than is Nigel Denby for extracting this unlawful toll. I call upon Sheriff Hightower of Dickey County to show the courage of his profession and put an immediate stop to this robbery. And I call upon all citizens of Fullerton, indeed upon all citizens of Dickey County, to refuse to do any business with him. Perhaps by a unified effort, we can remove the heel of oppression from the necks of our citizens.
A courageous article. What was Denby's reaction to it?
After the article came out, he sent me a letter asking me to meet with him.
And did you meet with him?
Yes, but it was a waste of time.
Why?
I had thought by the tone of his letter that we might be able to come to some accommodation. As it turned out, all he actually wanted was to bribe me to stop writing articles critical of him. In fact, he actually wanted to buy advertisements in the newspaper extolling his virtues.
How did he take it when you turned him down?
He wasn't very happy about it. As I recall, that was when he asked me to leave.
What about the people in town? How are they reacting to your critical articles? Didn't you say that Denby does a lot of business with people in town?
Yes. And because of that, I think my articles are making some of the people uncomfortable. But nearly as many appreciate them as are opposed to them.
And you're going to continue to write articles that are critical of Denby?
You're damn right I am. That is, as long as I can afford to keep the newspaper going. The problem now is many of my advertisers have dropped their accounts. They say that they don't want to do anything that would offend Denby for fear of losing his business. And without their ads, I may not be able to continue for lack of money.
How much would it cost for you to continue?
I don't know exactly. I can put out a few more editions, but then I'll need new newsprint and ink.
Suppose I buy in as a partner. How much would it cost for me to invest in 1/4 of the paper? That would still leave you in control.
Are you serious?
I'm very serious.
Do you think $125 would be fair?
More than fair. I'll give you $125 for a quarter share of the paper and another $100 for operating expenses.
It seems to me like we went through this once before. Only then it was gold ore you gave me.
No gold ore this time, just money, I'm afraid.
Just money, he says. All right, I suppose I can take just money.
Matt stepped out to his horse, got the money from his saddlebag, then came back in.
I have another suggestion if you're open to it.
What's your suggestion?
Suppose you remain publisher, but hire me to work for you. That'll give me an excuse for being here, and I can share the heat on anything that appears in the paper.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to put you in danger because of what is essentially my fight. What's so funny?
John, you invited me here, remember? Doesn't that sort of make it my fight?
Well, if you put it that way, I guess you're right.
Besides, I just bought into the paper, so in my book, that makes it my fight as well.
Matt, I have not the words to express my gratitude. I don't know what I was thinking writing to you as I did, but...
No, but. We're friends. It's all that's needed.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'll be in to work tomorrow. In the meantime, I need to find a place to stay while I'm here.
As I said in my letter, you're welcome to stay on a cot in an extra room at my house.
No, if this really does develop into some sort of a fight, it'd be better if we weren't staying at the same place. I'll find a hotel.
I'm afraid our hotel doesn't offer all that much.
Well, how about my Perkins boarding house?
Yes, that would be a great place for him.
Where is this place?
It's just across the street. It's that 2-story white house with the blue trim.
Kenny Perkins lives there, so if you need anything, ask him.
Kenny Perkins owns the house.
Not exactly. His mother owns the house. Kenny is our paper boy. He's only 12 years old, but he's very resourceful, as you'll see when you meet him.
All right. I'll give the place a try.
There's a meeting of the Fullerton Business Association this evening. It's being held in a conference room at the bank. After you get settled in, I'll come by for you. I'd like to introduce you to a few others in town.
At Ma Perkins' boarding house, the woman who greeted Matt at the door was very pretty, with blue eyes, high cheekbones, and a light spray of freckles across her nose. There was a young, fresh attractiveness about her, more like spring flowers than an arranged bouquet of roses.
Yes, sir?
I'd like to speak to Ma Perkins.
I'm Ma Perkins.
You? You're Ma Perkins?
My real name is Lucy. It's just that when I started my boarding house, Kenny suggested I call it Ma Perkins' house. I did, and before I knew it, people were calling me Ma Perkins. What can I do for you, sir?
My name is Matt Jensen. John Bryce suggested that I might be able to secure a room here.
So Millie and John sent you to me, did they? Well, bless their hearts. They're good people. But I worry about John. I swear, he has more courage than sense taking on Denby like he has. How is it that you know him?
I've taken a position at the newspaper with Mr. Bryce.
Is that a fact? My, I had no idea John was looking to increase his staff. But I suppose it is quite a job for him to be running the paper with just nobody but Millie for help.
I take it then that you have a room I can rent?
Yes, indeed. I have room for you. Would you like to see it?
If you don't mind.
It's upstairs. Please, follow me.
Matt followed Lucy up the stairs, then down the hall to a room that was at the front of the house, looking out onto the street. It was a comfortably appointed room, with an iron bedstead, feather mattress, chiffarobe, overstuffed chair, table, and lantern.
Does this meet with your approval? It'll be $3 a week. I hope that isn't too dear.
No, I think that's quite reasonable. And it's a very nice room. I'll take it.
Good. We'll be happy to have you as our guest. Come back downstairs with me to sign the guest book, and I'll give you a key to your room before you leave.
Fine.
Let me tell you about the place. There's a bathing room at the end of the hall, with a tub and a small stove you can use to warm your water. It's the only bathing room in the house, so when you use it, I recommend that you lock the door from inside. I furnish breakfast and supper. You're on your own for lunch. Supper is at 7. I know most folks eat at 6, but nearly all of my guests work somewhere, and it's sometimes hard for them to get off work and get home in time to have supper at 6. I hope that doesn't inconvenience you.
No, 7 o'clock would be fine.
Having just arrived in town, though, you might be hungry now. If you'd like, I could have Mrs. Black scare something up in the kitchen for you. She's a wonderful cook.
I appreciate that, Miss Perkins, but John is going to come by for me in a few minutes. I take it there's some sort of business meeting he wants me to attend?
Oh, that would be the Fullerton Business Association. I'll be attending that meeting as well. As a matter of fact, I'm president of the association.
You're the president?
Do you think, perhaps, that a woman cannot be the president of a business association?
No, it's not that. It's just that
Don't worry about it, Mr. Jensen. I know it's unusual. Here's the guest book.
As Matt signed the guest book, an elderly, overweight, and bald-headed man came in.
Good afternoon, Mr. Proffer. Did you have a good game of checkers with Mr. Connors? Mr. Proffer and Mr. Connors are old friends, and they meet every day in the general store to play checkers.
Young man, I recommend that you never play checkers with Dilbert Connors. He cheats.
I take it you lost today.
Who is this young fella?
This is Mr. Jensen. He's a new resident.
Do you play checkers, Mr. Jensen?
Yeah, but I cheat.
You are awful, Mr. Jensen. You are just awful.
What did my friend do that was so awful?
Oh, hello, John. Nothing. I was just laughing at something he said to Mr. Proffer is all.
Well, be careful of what you say to Proffer. He's a lawyer, you know, and will sue you at the drop of a hat. Are you ready to go?
I am.
Wait until I get my hat. If you two don't mind, I'll walk down to the meeting with you.
We'll be happy to have your company, Madam President.
In addition to John and Matt, there were 7 others in attendance at the business meeting. Lucy Perkins being one of the 7, and the only woman. They were sitting around a long table, with Lucy at the head.
Gentlemen, the meeting will come to order. As you have no doubt noticed, Mr. Bryce has brought a guest. Before I have him introduced, I wonder if I could ask each of you to tell him your name and what you do. Mr. White, we'll start with you.
I'm Leland White. I'm a pharmacist, and I own White's Apothecary.
A heavyset man spoke next.
I'm Otis Miller. I own the bank.
I'm Ernie Westfelling. I own the gun shop.
Paul Tobin, I own the Fullerton livery.
Tobin had a very prominent scar that cut like a purple lightning flash across his left cheek.
Jason Scott. Scott Leather Goods.
I'm Troy Jackson. I'm the blacksmith.
Jackson was a very large, powerfully built man with huge arms and shoulders that strained against the shirt he was wearing.
Now, Mr. Bryce, suppose you introduce your guest.
Madam President, gentlemen, this is Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen? Look here, you aren't the Matt Jensen, are you?
What do you mean, the Matt Jensen?
You mean you've never heard of Matt Jensen?
I have. You're a gunman, aren't you, Mr. Jensen?
Gentlemen, would you please allow me to continue my introduction? Now, as I said, this is Matt Jensen. I wrote to him and asked him to come to Fullerton because I think we need a man of his caliber and experience.
Need him to do what?
Specifically, Mr. Jensen will be in my employ. But given the recent, let us say, adventures of some of Denby's men, I think it would be good for the town to have someone like Mr. Jensen around.
To do what?
Just to be a presence.
Mr. Jensen, I mean no offense by this, but we already have one too many gunmen in this town. If you haven't met him yet, I'm sure you will. His name is Ollie Buttram, and he is pure evil. He's also deadly quick. If I were you, sir, I would leave town right away rather than face such a man.
Thank you for your concern, sir.
You have no intention of leaving, do you?
I was invited by John Bryce. I'll be in town as long as John wishes me to stay.
John, you said you intended Mr. Jensen to be a presence. What did you mean by that?
You do remember when Denby's ruffians tried to destroy the newspaper office, don't you, Leland?
Yes, of course.
Well, with Matt as my employee... Oh, well, the fact is he isn't exactly an employee. He's more like a partner, since he bought into the newspaper. And as a partner in the paper, I don't think we need fear any more vandalism.
I don't like it. It looks to me like you're declaring war with Denby, and you're bringing the entire town into your personal war.
That's just it, Leland. It isn't my personal war. Can't you see it? Denby literally has the entire town under siege.
I, for one, am glad to have Mr. Jensen around.
As am I.
Count me in.
Welcome to Fullerton, Mr. Jensen.
Leland? Otis?
I don't like him being here, but there's nothing I can do to stop it. Having this man around is going to cause us trouble. You mark my words. There will be trouble.
After the discussion about Matt, the meeting moved on to other issues, from how they, as businessmen, were going to respond to the city council's proposal to increase the sales tax by a penny on the dollar, to a vote of support of, as well as donation to, the town fire department's plans to hold a fireman's ball at the end of the month. When the meeting adjourned, Matt decided to take a look around town. Leaving the bank, Matt walked south on Monroe, where he encountered such businesses as an apothecary, a leather goods store, a mercantile, and the Morning Star Hotel. Turning west on Southworth Street, he encountered private houses and a church. He turned back north on Fullerton Street, which was lined on both sides with houses. Then from Fullerton, he turned east on 2nd Street, which brought him back to Monroe, the main street of the town. He decided to look for a saloon, and it wasn't hard to find. The New York Saloon was the biggest and grandest building in the entire town. He started to step up onto the porch.
You're new in town, ain't you, mister? When'd you get in?
Today.
Show me your coupon.
What coupon?
Don't play dumb with me, mister. You know what coupon I'm talking about. The one you got when you paid your toll on the road. Now show it to me.
Oh, the toll. Well, there's a problem. I decided not to pay the toll.
You decided not to pay the toll? Who the hell are you to decide not to pay the toll?
Doesn't look to me like you and I are going to be friends. So I see no reason to tell you my name.
Draw me.
Matt had brought his right hand around in a backhanded blow to the man's head. The man teetered, then fell off the porch. He landed in a rather substantial pile of horse apples. The blow had not only stunned the little man, it knocked the pistol from his hand. Matt reached down and picked up the pistol from the porch. Then he went inside as if nothing had happened. Stepping up to the bar, he swung open the cylinder of the little man's pistol, punched out all the cartridges, then handed the empty revolver to the bartender.
This belongs to that little fellow who was standing out on the porch. Expect he's going to be coming in here asking for it in a moment or two.
My God, mister! Is this Eilid Buttram's gun?
The bartender's question had gotten the attention of everyone in the room, and they looked toward the tall stranger who had just come in. One of the most interested of the saloon patrons was sitting in the very back of the room, nursing a drink. He had piercing dark eyes, a hook nose, and a protruding chin, which he was now rubbing absent-mindedly as he studied Matt Jensen.
I don't know the little fella's name. He didn't give it to me.
How'd you come by his gun?
He drew it against me, so I took it away from him.
Mister, Eilid Buttram has killed at least 10 men that I know of. He's little, but he's as quick as a rattlesnake and twice as evil.
Yeah, well, I didn't exactly get the idea that he was a Sunday school teacher.
Sunday school teacher. That's a good one.
How about a beer?
Sure thing, mister. And the first one is on the house. Anyone who can take a gun away from Eilid Buttram deserves it.
Oh, hell, Paul. You always give a free beer to someone who comes in a saloon for the first time.
Now don't go giving away my secrets, Stan.
Paul drew a beer, then handed it to Matt.
What brings you to Fullerton, Mr.
Name's Jensen. Matt Jensen. I came to Fullerton to take a job. Gonna be working for the newspaper.
Is that a fact? John Bryce hire you, did he?
Yep.
What'll you be doing?
Oh, I expect I'll do whatever he needs done. Keep the office and the printing press clean, run errands, sell advertising, maybe write an article now and then for him. That's so funny.
A handyman. You took Buttram's gun away from him, but you're going to be a handyman. This is rich. Yes, sir, this is really rich.
It's honest work. You don't have anything against honest work, do you?
No, I don't mean that. It's just... Look out, mister!
Spinning toward the door, Matt saw Eilid Buttram charging through it with a gun in his hand. Buttram pulled the trigger, and the bullet slammed into the bar right next to Matt.
You son of a bitch! Nobody does that to me!
Matt dropped his beer, drew his own pistol, and fired. The .44 slug from Matt's pistol caught the little man in the heart. When the bullet came out through the back, it brought half his shoulder blade with it, leaving an exit wound the size of a $20 gold piece. Buttram staggered backward, crashing through the batwing doors and landing flat on his back on the front porch. His eyes were open and unseeing.
Looks like I'll be needing another beer.
Yeah, sir.
The bartender drew another beer and handed it to Matt.
Since I spilled the other one, I guess I'd better pay for this one.
Mister, if I was you, I'd drink that beer just real fast and ride out of town.
Why? It was self-defense. Everyone in here saw it. I'm not concerned about the law. Besides, I've taken a job here. I'm going to be working at the newspaper, remember?
It ain't the law you need to worry about. It's Nigel Denby. Buttram worked for him.
Who did this?
I did.
You're under arrest.